Hello, Paul. Hello. Come in. Come in. Have a seat. It's good to see you again. Welcome to the office of your therapist, Dr. Helfenstefner. How may I help you today, Paul?
Thank you for bringing me in, Dr. Harsky and Stutch. I don't know. Maybe it's the way I live, but I've made a few enemies over the years. And it's kind of, you know, there's people over. I've offended at school.
Oh,
wasn't the kindest to, and you know, people who I worked with.
That is unfortunate.
Even you know, outlying people in the family at some points, and definitely people in the podcasting community.
Well, you know, that's understandable.
But what I really worry about is them all teaming up to get me. What I'm anxious about.
So a heightened sense of paranoia. Right. Let's get right into it.
I'm just scared that they'll just invade my life.
Paranoia and boundary issues. This is going to be a wonderful session, my friend.
Awesome. I'm looking forward.
G'day everyone, welcome to episode 5 of DC OCD, where this week Paul and I will be looking at invasion. You have to say it with an exclamation mark. So welcome, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Mike. So Invasion, 1988's Invasion. It was written by Keith Giffen. I think he plotted it, and all the actual dialogue and stuff was by Bill Mantlow. It was penciled by Todd McFarlane and Bart Sears. Bart Sears, that's a 90s name, but this is the 80s. Inks for across the issues came from a variety of people. There's P. Craig Russell, Al Gordon, Joseph Rubinstein, Tom K. Christopher, and Pablo Marcos. And the whole thing was coloured by Carl Gafford, except for the bits that were coloured by Gene D'Angelo. And there was word balloons. It's not a silent comic, so they were done by Gaspar Saladino, Augustin Mas, and John Costanza. And the whole thing was edited by Andy Helfer. So, in this one, basically aliens come to get all the superheroes because Earth is a pain in their butt.
Pretty much. So,
they all the aliens from, you know, books like The Amiga Men and that you've seen in comics like The Legion of Superheroes, etc., and the Teen Titans, they all team up to come to Earth to kick some butt. So, is there anything that I haven't covered in that description that you
Well, no, I think you've covered the basic thing. I think we should point out that the main aim is to get the metahumans. Get rid of them. So that Earth
metahumans. You start hearing the word metahumans a lot.
Yes.
Now.
It's basically get rid of the metahumans and Earth is ripe for the picking and easier to conquer. So, but the Dominators, who basically lead this alliance of all these alien species, they have an ulterior motive, which is covered more in the third book of this event.
Tourism?
Yeah, tourism. Yeah.
Sweet.
No, they want the metahuman gene for themselves.
Ah.
Yes.
Yes. So for our genes.
They have come for our genes. So they want to study the metahumans further and enslave them and create their own metahumans. So a little bit of deception on their part with their own alliance. Those sneaky dominators. Oh, gosh.
Good stuff. So there's a lot of tie-ins into this one. A fair bit of comics involved. So the main story was three single comics. They were big, fat, no ads, 80-page issue. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and basically they segment the main parts of the invasion into three. So you get, the first part, which is the first strike, which really covers a lot of what the aliens are doing before they decide to, hit Earth. So they're doing a lot of research on how the best way to kill humans is. And from this, this research basically uncovers that humans are very prone to becoming superheroes. So they, they kill about 100 people and 10 of them become superheroes in the process and don't die.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good for humanity, not so good for the aliens. But that spurs them on to decide to, come to Earth and, get us before we get them. So it sort of divides up. So you've got the first strike issues, which are really about the early days of the war. It's quite a breadth of the DC universe involved in this. So you had, your standard comics like The Flash and Justice League, it's set, and Wonder Woman, Superman, and all the Superman books at the time. But, it was good to see the Doom Patrol were involved in this one, Mike, weren't they?
Woo! Yes. Yeah. Yes. But more so in the Battleground Earth.
Yeah.
The middle section of the event.
Yes, definitely. So the first book basically is to the start of the war, and the aliens come and they give Earth an ultimatum and say, give up all the superheroes or we're going to destroy you.
Yep.
And the first book ends with Earth telling the invaders, get lost or get stuffed or something.
On the front page of the Daily Planet from Friday, yes, November 4th, 1988, in all caps, taking up the entire page, it says, Earth 2 invaders drop dead.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. So when the Dominators pop down to the newsstand to get the latest paper to see what's happening. they say, you want anything else? No, just the paper, thanks, mate.
Yep.
They would have read that. Oh, what? What's going on?
Yeah, they would have felt slighted.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so that leads to book two, which is Battleground Earth, which is basically all the comics that came out between issue one and issue two are all about the invasion underway. So there's fighting all around the world and different things going on, and there's a bit of action in Cuba with the Manhunter and the Flash. Mm-hmm. There's a Swamp Thing tie-in, which is really, the Swamp Thing was basically for mature readers at that time. So that's a really interesting read if you want to see the most what's a negative depiction of Guy Gardner that you can imagine?
Wow, really?
Oh, yeah. It goes further than any other. He's basically a murderous bastard. Like, he basically kills an unarmed alien from behind, just because.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a bit of shenanigans with shape-changing aliens, etc. The New Guardians, hot out of the hottest book that come out of Millennium.
Oh, I was so thrilled to see their return.
Yeah.
I turned the page and someone mentioned Gloss, and that woman was standing there, and I thought, where do I know her from? Oh, God, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen or read about her in a Millennium. Ah! kill me.
Oh, dear. And I'm the one getting therapy.
Yes.
Yeah. And the Atom was involved, which was in the series The Power of the Atom, where he was back after being in the jungle as a tiny, tiny hero in the jungle, Tiny Conan. Captain Atom was sort of leading the military side of things. The Suicide Squad were involved, though. They never got an official, you know, cover credited tie-in, but they did actually have an issue that did tie in. So there's it was a full scope of stuff. It was pretty good.
There were some surprising cameos in this as well, like Shade the Changing Man turns up.
Yeah, well, he's in Suicide Squad at the time.
Oh, there you go. Right.
Yeah.
And Deadman made a very surprising appearance.
Oh, Deadman has the moment of the miniseries, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very pivotal moment there.
Stone cold. if you don't know what it is, I don't think I'll spoil it. But he really does turn the tide in the third issue.
Mm.
Yeah, in a very cold-blooded way, really.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And Checkmate was involved, though I would say that Paul Kupperberg just wrote the stories he wanted to tell with Checkmate and just sort of put a few labels in to make it connect to the invasion because there's no actual aliens in their issues.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And if you're reading Superman books at the time, Superman in the middle of a nervous breakdown. So.
Yeah. See, in the third book, it's kind of like he comes back and he just hangs out in space and he says, I can't ever go back down to Earth, so I'm just going to hang back here and watch all of you freak out about the gene bomb that's been activated, and good luck to you all.
Yeah, what happens with Superman is quite weird because in the Burn finale, when he was leaving the book, he had Superman kill some Kryptonian criminals, which was something that Zack Snyder really thought was awesome.
Right.
Yeah, but Superman sort of has some sort of mental break after that and sort of starts moonlighting in another identity when he's asleep or unconscious. And this leads to him going, hang on, I'm out of control. I must leave the planet and never come back. So he's, okay, goodbye, Metropolis. I'm out of here. I'm never coming back. And immediately stops in Invasion 3 and says, except I will help you all with this invasion. So he goes on the missions in Invasion. So,
right.
And then he's off after that, to space, never to return, and we never heard from Superman again.
Thank goodness.
Other big deals was some of the action takes place in Australia.
Hooray!
Hooray, yeah. So what is it, 80% of the population get killed in Australia?
Something like that. Yeah,
yeah. And I'm no expert, but that's a bit of a game changer for our country.
A little bit.
Yeah. And some very dodgy depictions of Sydney Harbour and Melbourne, downtown Melbourne.
Yeah.
Melbourne doesn't even have a downtown, I would say.
I'm unsure. I've only been to Melbourne once, but it is a very generic looking city in this story.
Careful, don't bag Melbourne.
Oh, I'm not bagging Melbourne. I'm bagging Melbourne in Invasion.
Ah, good.
Yes.
Yeah. It is, for those of you who don't know, Melbourne has a sense of inferiority with the other cities in Australia, and there's a fair bit of competitiveness there that I don't think is shared by the other cities because they just don't even think about it. Yeah.
Hello to all our Melbourne listeners.
Goodbye to all our Melbourne listeners.
It's a beautiful city, though. It's like
it's lovely. It's got fantastic comic shops.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. That were all destroyed in the invasion.
Yep. Yep. No. And our one and only hero is the Tasmanian Devil.
The bloody Tasmanian Devil.
Yep. And didn't he do a lot? Yeah.
Gets caught. Pretty much straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway.
Good work, Taz. Yeah, good
Pity.
Work.
Pity. Yeah. Let's talk about this type of event. So I would say this is a top-notch occupier.
Yes.
Like all the books something to do. And some of the books do really well with it. And, the Doom Patrol used what it was given to basically destroy the Doom Patrol to clear the decks for Grant Morrison to take over from the outgoing Paul Kupperberg. Yeah, so that was one of the things to come from it. And the other thing, I think, is it wasn't a bad little launcher. It launched a few little titles to come out of it. The one that lasted the longest was Legion 89 with the Legion with the dots in between. So
yes.
Yeah, that did pretty well. Yeah. So what were your big deals, Mike?
I think just the scope of it involving pretty much everyone in the DCU was pretty cool. It actually felt like a global conflict, because one of my issues with big events like this is that if I miss out on the tie-ins, I tend to miss out on bits of information, whether or not they're extremely vital. But in this, like in the start of the second book of Battleground Earth, you know, there's a nice, it's actually like a recap as to what's going on.
And, yeah, you know, a little news bulletin.
Yeah, yeah. There's stuff happening all over the world, and there's some really nice recap scenes in there. So just the scope of it and how everyone came together. So, you know, you had General Wade Eyreling leading Earth's armed forces. As you said before, Captain Atom leading the forces of the superheroes. Amanda Waller was, you know, on the intel desk, and Maxwell Lord liaising and advising with the JLIs. So it was like, yeah, everyone was there. It was great. It was, everyone had something to do to help save the world.
Yeah, it did a good job of, you know, bringing everyone in. And yeah, as you said, the actual miniseries itself doesn't leave you hanging. So you get the gist of who's in it and, you know, the different aliens attacking all over the world. So,
yeah.
There's variety in the attacks and the types of foes that they're fighting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's overall, I think it's a fun read. It's there's excitement. There's a big twist when you find out what the Dominators are actually up to, and how that affects everyone in the third book, and the disastrous effects of the gene bomb. So, yeah, it's good fun. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, we're covering it fairly succinctly here, but if you would like to know, you know, if you want to go in deep on the invasion, there is a podcast out there called Invasion First Strike. And as the name suggests, it's about the invasion. It's done by Siskoid and Bass, and it's on the Fire and Water Network. And it's an excellent podcast. But they cover all the chapters of the invasion bit by bit. So getting through them all. And, you know, they've done some excellent coverage. Particularly on the Doom Patrol episode, I thought. So, anyway, let's play that promo, and then we'll come back for our scores.
Stop and listen! Stop and listen to me! Listen! Listen to me! They're not human! Everyone! They're here already! You're next!
November 4th, 1988. Earth is invaded by an alien alliance composed of several species, including the Dominators, the Kuns, the Tanagarians, and the Durlans. And they want our superheroes. Even though Australia has been decimated, the United Nations response is unequivocal. Drop dead. First Strike, the Invasion podcast, takes you back to that moment in time and covers the entire Invasion DC Comics crossover. Issue by issue, tie-in by tie-in, join Bass and Siskoid at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on iTunes. First Strike, the Invasion Podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Remember, Miller.
So now it's the part of the show where we work out what we think of it through scoring the parts of the miniseries. So we've got the category of eventiness, we've got the writing, we've got the art and the covers, and we have the impact and the legacy. So where do you fall on eventiness for this, Mike?
Eventiness, I'm going to give Invasion, because you've got to say it with the exclamation mark, I'm going to give the series an 8. I think it's a massive DCU global event that has a huge chunk of the DC characters involved. And it's awesome fun to see them all, you know, teaming up in different ways and going off to different countries. I thought it was a massive event. And it tied into a shitload of DC books back in the day. So it was huge. Sorry for the bad language. I'll learn one day. I'm giving it an 8. What about you?
I agree. It has a really big scale, broad scope, pulls in all the characters in a very natural way, gives everyone something to do. You know, there's amazing missions at the end, and, you know, the teams are affected. So, you know, I give it a 9. I will go further than you.
Ooh, right.
Yeah.
Okay, then. So where do you stand on the writing?
The writing, I think it's very solid, fairly respectable. I don't think anything's wrong with it. So for me, the writing, I'd give it an 8. I like the turns of phrase and the descriptions and, you know, the way the aliens are characterized and where the most of the heroes are characterized and, mm-hmm. Solid 8.
Okay.
What about you, Mike?
I'm going to give it a 7. I think it's fairly consistent. I think the issue for me personally is that without a bunch of the tie-ins, there are bits of information I'm missing out on, which I know sounds ridiculous because that's a common thing that happens with these big events. It's kind of unavoidable. But it does an okay job of getting you caught up. And it's still a good read. So, as you said, it's the dialogue's great. The team-ups and the missions are really good. I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay. Nice. Now, as for the art, it's not as strong in the art. I mean, it's very 80s art, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So you got a bit of Todd McFarlane, but it's not Todd at the height of his powers. But he's getting to that point because he racks off to Marvel in the middle of it, and Bart Sears has to finish it off. So I'll give it a 7 for the art. I think it's very good for the 80s, but it looks like it came from the 80s.
Very much so. And that's why I'm going to give it a 6 because, ooh, yeah, it's of its time. It's consistent, but there was nothing that stood out and made me go, wow. Also, I took points off because of their complete failure to draw an even semi-accurate map of Australia. And for Melbourne just being a bland, generic-looking city in the comic. The lovely city in real life. Flinders Street Station. Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful building. You know, don't get me wrong, Melbourne listeners. It's very 80s art. It's good. It looks good. It just doesn't have that wow factor for me. So I'm giving it a 6.
Ah, okay, harsh. Now, Legacy, I think, for this one is an interesting one because it has kept coming back in different ways. So, I mean, for one thing, you had really very little come out of it except for the Legion series, and there was the Blasters special, which was some of the people, the humans who got superpowers, mm-hmm. Formed a team which were treated as a joke, basically, in one comic only.
Right.
Legion 89 became Legion 90, 91, morphed into Rebels at some point, and then it came back again just before the New 52 as Rebels in a new incarnation. So a bit of lasting power there. But I think the thing that really stuck with this book was the concept of the metagene and the gene bomb going off and triggering all sorts of changes. So lots of things happen in different books because of that. You know, the Doom Patrol get decimated. Animal Man changes his powers at this point, and there's a few things like that happen in different books, like Fire in the JLI. She becomes different powers, so she turns into like a green human torch, whereas before mm-hmm. she was just chucking fire from her mouth,
right?
Which is weird. But yes, this concept of the metagene has really stuck with the DC universe, and it's become just common science in comic book science for the DC universe.
Yes,
and they even had the CW crossover the year before last was all about the invasion, and it was a pretty piss weak version of the invasion, but but it did use it in a way. But I mean, the series keeps coming back in different ways. There's even like Jeff Lemire and Keith Giffen are coming back for a new version of what do we call it, Inferior 5, but it's basically set in the invasion.
They're
coming out with it. Yeah, there's a new miniseries coming out later this year.
I knew it was on the way. I didn't realize when it was set. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and Invasion is actually a big part of it. I mean, it's the trigger for these people getting powers and being crap superheroes. So.
Right.
Yeah, so Invasion is very, very still a thing. So for that reason, I'm going to give it a 9 for Legacy.
Wow. Okay. See, I have a different take in that, well, I'm going to give it a 7 because I haven't picked up on its effects that much as you have, whereas you know, you've seen the CW crossover, and I guess the metagene and the whole concept of metahumans is, I guess, the biggest lasting effect thing. Obviously, being a massive Doom Patrol fan, you know, the effect it had on the Patrol is pretty much the only tie-in I was really personally interested in. So that I think 7, yeah, it's still looked upon favorably. It's still an enjoyable read. It's just I haven't personally noticed any long-lasting effects of it, but I think it's held in a better regard than some other events may have been that we have previously discussed. So,
not naming any, but it rhymes with millennium.
No, not at all. So I think 7's kind of wishy-washy, kind of, it's not dull and no one gives a shit, but it's not like, holy crap, it's Crisis, the second coming. You know, it's like, it's good stuff. It made an impact back in the day. It's still well regarded to this day. So yeah, 7.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'd love to see just them to remake Invasion with the current DC Universe. I reckon I'd just go down a treat. But, you know, they've got other ideas. So they're our scores. But one of the things we do on the show is we don't get enough points out of us voting to come up with a score out of 100. So we ask someone else, and we call them semi-OCD because they're not as OCD as we. So in this case, we've got Siskoid from the Invasion podcast, and this is what he had to say.
Hi, this is Siskoid from First Strike, the Invasion podcast, over at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, which sort of explains why I've been called to rate the Invasion crossover. If not, let me describe my DC OCD symptoms more clearly. I am in the fourth quarter of a 40-episode podcast that discusses Invasion and all its tie-ins, so obviously I rate it highly. Well, we've seen a lot of alien invasions in DC Comics, of course, but somehow, despite potential global consequences, they were always confined to a single book or a family of books. Where was everybody else? So Invasion does the idea correctly. But how does it rate on DC OCD's scoreboard? In terms of eventiness, it's a global problem that crossed over into most books for 2 months. The First Strike tie-ins of the first month had heroes battling a variety of aliens in different locales. The event very much at the forefront, no Red Sky Syndrome. The second month aftermath wasn't as strong, at times relegated to seeing the gene bomb exploding on the last page. And it's a shame that some tentpole titles refuse to play the game. So New Titans are entirely absent and Batman mostly absent from the proceedings. These are minor caveats. Invasion feels important and is important to most of the DC line. 8 out of 10. The writing is strong. There's some humor to be had in Alien Alliance infighting, trademark Giffen, really, but also dramatic moments. Best of all, it doesn't feel padded because each issue tells a different story. Number one builds the Alliance. There's almost no Earth action. Number two has the heroes rout the aliens. And number three deals with the effects of the gene bomb. High marks on structure alone. So this is a 9 out of 10 for me. The art is a mixed bag, however. These books are too big to be handled by a single artist, I suppose. So it varies even inside of a single issue. And the artists, who are either hot or on the cusp of being hot at the time, feel very dated now. Todd McFarlane and Bart Sears especially. Keith Giffen is himself in a transition period influenced by Kevin Maguire. I can only muster 6 out of 10 for art. Now finally, its impact and legacy. The biggest element is of course the revelation that a lot of superhero origins are explained by the metagene. From here on out, human supers are referred to as metahumans or metas. I'm not a big fan, as this is part of the pre-crisis's attempt to marvelize the DC universe and to give it its own mutants and sort of cheap out on hero and villain origins, but it hasn't really been problematic in the long term. The metas created as part of the event became the blasters, and that didn't go anywhere. In fact, not even as far as similar spinoffs like the New Guardians or the Blood Pack. The Gene Bomb does change some people's powers, most prominently Fire of the JLI. It would give Maxwell Lord mind control powers, and like it or not, this will lead into his becoming a villain by the events of Infinite Crisis. And it creates Crazy Jane, a beloved member of Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol. That version of the Doom Patrol is a soft spin-off from Invasion, along with Justice League Europe and Legion 89. Largan's participation in that later team would retroactively lead to the revelation that he, as Valor, was responsible for seeding the future worlds of the United Planets with superpowered folk, humans experimented upon by the Dominators during Invasion. So in a way, Invasion is responsible for the Legion of Superheroes. And the Dominators would gain prominence as villains both in the contemporary and 30th century eras of the DCU. A few deaths also resulted, but no one I'd call crucial. Celsius, Hot Hands, Jet, Wally West's dad, a few Omega Men, big deal. The storyline would eventually be spoofed in an issue of Uncanny X-Men, would inspire the first wide crossover event of the Arrowverse, and it's still being referenced in comics today, most notably in the new Doom Patrol comic. So, obviously, a big impact on comics creators and fans and DC history alike. 10 out of 10. 33 out of a possible 40. To learn more, check out First Strike the Invasion podcast over at the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And thanks for listening.
Remember Melbourne. Well, thank you, Siskoid, for those thoughts. Very articulate and well-reasoned. And you would be the expert, I would say. So if we take his 17, which is his 33 halved, we add it to our scores, which are 28, 33. We carry the 5 over the 6 plus the 1 over there, divide by 6, 28. We get a score of 78 for Ooh. Invasion.
Ooh.
So not at the top, but... in the top 5, definitely.
Yeah.
So 78. Okay. Well, that. Okay. Where does that put it in the rankings? So I believe it is 4th.
Wow. Okay.
So this stage we have Crisis on Infinite Earths at the top. We have Cosmic Odyssey. There's a bit of a dark horse there. It came in at number 2, Legends, and then right a little bit below Legends is Invasion, and then down the bottom somewhat is Millennium.
Yeah, as it should be.
But before we get out of here, we do get some feedback on the show. So we heard from... Firstly, we heard from Dr. Ange on our Millennium episode, and he was very impressed that we made it through Millennium, and he had some comments to add. He was hopeful that the Millennium New Guardians would solidify Harbinger as a player in the DCU, but didn't really happen, did it, Ange? And he didn't mind Joe Staton's art, but it couldn't help but suffer when compared to Perez and then Byrne. But as for its legacy, it has entered the lexicon of, you know, event evaluation where you say, well, things didn't suck as much as Millennium. So anyway, so that was a summary of his thoughts. We heard from Jimmy McGlinchey on Millennium as well, and he sent us quite a lot of text about it, so I won't go into it. But he thought it did succeed in tying seamlessly to the issues, the in-betweens. So it had the week-by-week chapters. He was very impressed with them. He did think the art was a bit meh, and the aftermath was disappointing. Though, you know, he mentioned that the New Guardians were launched but suffered through villains powered by cocaine, one called Snowflame.
Snowflame.
3 of their members infected by HIV by a vampire called the Hemogoblin.
Oh, God.
Hemogoblin.
Wow.
And even at the end, it was real. They weren't really the Chosen. But they were there to babysit the true Chosen, which is, you know, way to kill the series.
Wow.
Yeah. And Frank, Diablo Frank, from the Rolled Spine podcast, who does the Martian Manhunter podcast called The Idle Head of Diablo, he was doing his own scores in line with ours on Twitter, which was very interesting. But they don't count, Frank, because it's our podcast, mate.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, you are not OCD at all.
But if you want to see our scores and you want to see them, and they're real because they're on the internet, so, you know, what's more real than being on the internet, you need to go to comicosity.com, which is a fantastic site for comic news and opinions and attitudes, and, you know, it's a pretty great site. But they have the ladder, so if you look for our DC OCD episodes under podcasts, you can see the ladder there, and it's got some nifty features where you can sort on different columns. So you can sort on the order, the title, the score, so you can see which one's at the top, which one's at the bottom, and that'll keep spoilers. And that will change week by week as we keep adding new episodes. So check it out. Comicosity. Anyway.
Yes.
But I think that's all we've got time for. What are we doing next time, Mike?
Next time, it's going to be the event known as Armageddon 2001.
All right, Armageddon out of here then.
Ah.
Anyway, if you want to send us an email, you can send it to dcocdcast@gmail.com, and you can get in touch with us on Twitter at dcocdcast. So that's all we've got time for. But thanks very much for the therapy, Mike.
You mean Dr. Herfenstefner?
What's his name?
I'm just reading his business card. It's Herfenstefner.
Herfenstefner. Got it.
That's our show, folks. Catch you next time.